Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to have an adventuresome afternoon. Why? Because we're going to be talking about a real, live person who has had a life journey that I don't know many people would relate to, especially women. My guest today is Lisa Lockwood. Lisa has been a beauty queen. She ended up being on a SWAT team, and we're going to find out a little bit about what went on in between. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna. I'm happy to be here.
Well, your book, Undercover Angel, I remember when I first got it, and I thought, Undercover Angel. Now, this is going to be really interesting, because behind you, and I had the privilege of meeting with you just a couple months back at the National Publicity Summit. You're very petite, you are blonde, no one looking at you in the wildest of their dreams would ever put a police uniform on you and think of you as part of a SWAT team. That just doesn't fit. But before we get into that segment, I know that you traveled a journey, and it was a journey. I don't think you figured out long, way ahead. You weren't one of these people that said, this is what I'm going to be when I grow up.
You're exactly right.
You followed I don't know that I'd call it spontaneous, but it just seemed like somebody else was choreographing the whole scenario.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to be beauty queen? Let's talk about that.
Okay. My mother entered me in the Miss Illinois USA pageant without me knowing. And why would she do something like that, people often ask. And it all makes sense when you have a little bit of history about my life. I came from a family of 7 children. I grew up on welfare. I was on welfare all the way up until I was 18 years old. And I had 5 siblings who were high school dropouts. 3 of my sisters became teenage moms, and the cycle of welfare had continued. So for me, I did well in school. Academically, that was one of my stronger points. I was a closet reader as a kid, and I always just had some kind of drawing to doing well in school. So when I got to my senior year, my parents, again, they couldn't even afford to put me through. My other sisters dropped out because of that reason. I decided to work almost a full-time job when I was 17 years old at a little mini-mart in order to make the money, in order to pay the tuition, and also help out with family bills.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother definitely saw that I was a go-getter, and she so wanted me to be able to go to college. I mean, that was the furthest thing that my parents were in a position to do for me. So she entered me into the beauty pageant with hopes of me getting some type of scholarship or extra money in order to pursue an education or maybe even launch into some type of modeling career. So what I did is I found out that I was accepted in the pageant, and when I arrived, I really was like a fish out of water. These girls, most of the women there, had trained since they were children, had been exposed to the pageant experience, and I was different in that I had zero experience in that industry. I didn't know how to walk a runway. I didn't know how to apply my makeup like the other girls did. I wasn't privy to learning how to interview in front of a panel of professionals. So there were all these things that strike, so to speak, against me. Maybe I looked good on paper and had a nice biography because of my academics. However, the other things that are pretty important in the pageant world, mm-hmm. I was lacking. So my roommate, just so happened, was the former Miss Teen Illinois, and now she was competing at the higher level to be Miss Illinois, to represent Illinois for the USA pageant. And she decided to take me under my wing. She was a true Miss Congeniality, and under her wing, rather, and said, I'm going to teach Lisa. I'm going to really try and help you do this. So kind of gave me a little bit of a crash course in walking and exposed me a little bit to getting an idea of what kind of questions the judges ask. So the whole experience for me was, again, like a fish out of water, but at that time I felt that it was desperate for me, a desperate time, and I wanted to do well. So I kind of adopted everything that she showed me, and I acted as if I came from the same background that she did. And long and short of it is that I placed 25th out of 205 girls, which meant that I didn't qualify for any scholarship. So that ended my pageant experience, and then it became time to make a decision on how I was going to get to college.
So here you are. And you really give some good insights into the pageant world in the front part of your book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does one get into a college environment? And I was intrigued with this because I've heard women tell a similar story. But how did you manage to get your college education? Tell us the journey that took you into that venue.
For sure. So after that experience, I thought, okay, so what do I need to do? I already started taking classes at a community college and, you know, just could afford to take a couple. So I said, let me do that because I was still working. And I started waitressing and taking buses to get to work. And I just talked to somebody who told me that, you know, the National Guard helps pay for college. Why don't you look into that? And then once I did explore that, I realized that the military, if I went in full time into the military active service, that they would pay even more. So that's when I started researching branches of the military. And again, it was never anything that I ever expected for my life. If I had my dream, I used to watch beauty pageants when I was a kid and Charlie's Angels, and I had these grandiose dreams of going to California and becoming an actress. And, you know, that's exactly what I had planned out for my life. In my high school yearbook, it says, Lisa is going to be a successful actress. So less than a year later, deciding to join the military in order to get an education was the furthest extreme that I could have ever imagined. So what I did is I decided that that was it. I took the Air Force exam, and I scored well. And the ironic thing, Donna, is that I scored well in the mechanical field.
Isn't that a hoot? I love that.
And the only reason is because I had the support of my father. He said, okay, let me show you the inner workings of a car engine. Let me teach you a little bit about how electricity works and polarity. And I truly wanted to do well. So I studied and studied and studied, and I scored high in that area. Not that I wanted to work in the mechanical field. It was just that that's what the test scores ended up being. So what the recruiter told me is, just because I did so well in that area, why don't you consider mechanical field instead of doing something administrative or nursing or medical?
Mm-hmm.
Because he thought that that would be an opportunity for me to get a promotion based on gender, so to speak, because there weren't a lot of women in that field. So I said, great, I believed him. I was just this naive thing.
I said,
fantastic, I will do that. So I went into the military open in the mechanical field. Now, when I finished basic training and it was time for them to dole out our assignments, I was handed a piece of paper and it said logistics squadron, and I had no idea what that meant. And I timidly walked up to one of the drill instructors and I said, can you tell me what I'm going to do? It was clear for everybody else they were going to be linguists and nurses and administrative assistants, and I had no idea. And he took the piece of paper out of my hand, looked at it for 2 seconds, flung it back in my face, and he said, you're a truck driver.
Oh, whoop-dee-doo.
Whoop-dee-doo is right.
Oh, wow, that's a big one.
It was really a big one, especially considering that I had just gotten my driver's license literally 3 weeks before I went in the military. There was no really urgent reason for me to have one because I couldn't drive my parents' car. They needed it. Insurance was high. I couldn't afford my own car. So I kind of waited till the last minute, a late bloomer, in learning how to drive. So with that, you know, I really barely had any expressway experience or highway. So I just thought to myself, I felt like crumbling. I said, this is the biggest joke that I've ever heard. Truly, this can't be true. So again, I kind of bit my lip and got to my duty assignment, and it was time to train. And I was initially very excited about it because it was an all-male squadron, and there was one female supervisor, and I thought, fantastic, now I have at least a woman that I can depend on, and she's going to realize that, you know, I'm kind of new and fledgling, kind of like a baby deer, and she would help me out and understand all of that. Ironically, it wasn't the case. I believe it was because she was the only female in the squadron and she was a supervisor. For whatever reason, she looked at me as something to be intimidated by.
So it reminded me when I was going through your book and reading this.
Yes.
The first image that popped up into my head was the movie Something Benjamin with Goldie Hawn.
Private Benjamin.
Private Benjamin. I thought, good Lord, did they talk did they talk to Lisa before they did this movie? I mean, you're not dingy like she was in that movie. But it was the same kind of naive whatever. You just don't have these exposures. And here you have a female that is very jealous of her positioning. And
exactly, yeah.
It's like, hey, I don't want you in here. You're a threat to me. And that's something often that occurs, and I've seen it, experienced it myself, and we have this misunderstanding that all women are not going to be of that dispositioning. And that's not the case. What happens with the guys happens with a gal.
It sure does. It's across the board.
Absolutely.
So that first year was very difficult for me. While all of my fellow airmen were out there learning how to drive heavy equipment, I was banished to the wash rack. So not only did I feel that it was a bit of an insult to hand me a truck driving job, not that there's anything wrong with that, it was just that I didn't feel I was qualified for it. Then I felt like it was an additional kind of slap in the face that I was going to be washing and waxing vehicles for a solid year, working in essence a warehouse car wash.
Oh, that's another whoopee. That's another exciting thing. Boy, that would set you up for life to hate doing any washing and waxing forever after you've gone through that in the military.
Exactly. However, I had always embraced good humor and optimism, so I found ways to make that wash rack a fun rack. And every time we were out there, it was something. It was some kind of game or a competition to see who could finish first. And a lot of camaraderie and music and, you know, kind of like the movie Car Wash.
Well, here you are. You've gone into the military. You're evolving through this cycle of learning and growing up into being a woman. You end up getting mixed up with a guy by the name of Tony.
That's right.
And you ended up in a horrific, abusive situation with
yes.
him.
Yes.
And it lasted a lot longer than it would have lasted if you had not been in the military, because you'd be away from him.
That's right. That's right. I was engaged to him soon after my pageant experience. And I knew I was going in the Air Force. He knew that I was going into the Air Force. And he was definitely a man who was extremely, what I looked at as a very strong father figure, I guess, at the time, because he was very protective of me. I loved all the attention. The fact that he became jealous or envious if other men looked at me, all of that was very flattering for a young, naive 18-year-old who was just
getting to
branch out on her own. And he was very generous as far as giving of gifts. He even told me, you know, this should have been a red flag for me, but again, I had no reference. He said, I don't want you to work as a waitress because too many people flirt with you, so I will pay your salary for the week. I thought, hey, this is really fantastic. He truly wants to take care of me. So he did follow me along into the Air Force, and we lived off base. Eventually we were married, and that's when I started to see kind of his true colors, that he was a regular drinker. And at that time I just thought, okay, he's a regular drinker. Does that mean he's an alcoholic? But then when I got to see his violent side, where he would terrorize our home, where he would want to drive drunk and get into DUI accidents, and, you know, our relationship was really spiraling. And in my situation, I felt that it was extremely fear-based because I felt that I was in love with him, and I wanted to change him, and I thought I would have the ability to do that over time, and he would see that drinking was not good for him. However, everybody knows, especially these days, that nobody's going to change unless they want to change and if they admit to the problem, and he wasn't nowhere near in a position to do that.
So you eventually left him, but let's touch for a moment, because you were in the Persian Gulf conflict.
That's right.
Now, not many women were in that environment, but
no.
You were there. And in Operation Desert Storm.
That's right.
You were involved with that. And one of the things that happened when it was less than a year after you were there, you were nominated for and won the prestigious honor of Airman of the Year worldwide for the Logistics Squadron.
That's right.
And that's quite a statement. I don't know that any woman had won that prior to you.
You know what? I don't have the statistics on that. However, I was extremely flattered. And a large part of that award, I believe, was because at the time when Desert Storm had officially broken out, all of my supervisors were sent overseas, and I was stateside initially. And my job stateside was to take on the duties of supervisors who were 10 years senior than I. So handling all the logistical support and shipping of cargo and, you know, all the supplies that needed to go overseas and also handing all the dignitary support, I kind of filled those shoes and I did it well. And I had a phenomenal major who recognized that. And daily, you know, she would check in with me and say, you know, protocol has given you great reviews, et cetera, et cetera. So during that time, it was about probably about a good 9 months that I had stepped up to the plate as a young girl. I was probably 20 at the time, and I had taken the position and did it well.
Now, you, from being over in the Middle East, you came to a profound awareness that there were some places in the world where it was definitely not an advantage to be a woman, and that was one of them. Now, during this cycle of your life, you were going back into school. You were wanting to work full-time as a private security officer, and part of your curriculum was that you had to devote 200 hours as an intern at a police department of your choice.
That's right.
Why was it that that was required? What was it that you were looking at for a college degree?
After I started working private security when I left the military, I was wearing the uniform. I was used to wearing a man's uniform in the military. And then again, it was very comfortable for me to do that. So I kind of like, okay, I have this down. I don't need to think about what I'm wearing. And I'm very comfortable wearing masculine clothes at the time. So I started to take just a couple of criminal justice classes just to see what it was like. I said, let me explore this because I was doing what the regular criteria was for as far as all the basic classes just for a degree. And when I took the first class, I was hooked. It had to do a little bit with criminal profiling and finding out what causes criminals, to do the things that they do and their behavior patterns. And I took psychology classes, and then I was interested. And once I decided to go for an associate's degree, criminal justice based is when they required the 200-hour internship. And I chose the Chicago Police Department to do a ride-along with.
Now, you ended up becoming an officer, and part of your training, this I just loved. Ladies listening, you've got to take this in mind. One of the tests that she had to do, and she had to pass this physical test, which I think is right, because as an officer, there are things that you're going to encounter, and you must be able to handle it, male or female.
Yeah.
I don't think there should be any excuses for either sex.
Agreed.
One of them was you have to ascend a staircase carrying a barbell weighing 70% of your body weight. 70%. Most people on this planet can't do that.
Right.
Because they're not in that good a shape. I don't care what country they're from. So
true.
When you are looking at that, I mean, you had to do this. And I have to say, I really felt that that was a profound statement about you. Because you didn't whine. You didn't say, gee whiz, I'm this delicate female. Look at me. I'm cute. I'm blonde. You didn't go there. You
right.
were not an airhead. You said, this is what I'm going to do, and if I've got to do it, I've got to do it. And you performed. I get so sick and tired of people saying, well, women are just too frail to do this stuff.
That's right.
And if you're qualified, whether you're male or female, that's what, hey, if you can do it, you do it. And you came in number 4 in the positioning on the testing
that's
on all
right.
levels.
That's right.
And that is really something. There is an advantage to a lot of these guys that are hired on police forces throughout the country, throughout the world, because if they're over 6 foot and they've got somebody that weighs 350 pounds, it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
What they have learned is that women have an advantage, but by golly, that female, she may encounter another female. I've known women officers that have encountered other women who are far worse than any 350-pound guy that they would encounter.
Yes, you are exactly right.
I mean, this is, so many people live in la-la land, but that's because I had exposure years ago to seeing the environment of just what police have to deal with on a daily basis, and it's not what they portray on television lots of times. It's a whole different world, and so here you are with this. You're going through all of this stuff. You're going through the training. You have to deal with all of the biases and attitudes. But you found the guys ended up being pretty straight with you after a while, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Because, I mean, there's always going to be a handful. And I had tremendous support from my supervisors. My supervisors did see that I was out there effectively doing the job, and they cheered me on. Anytime a special assignment would come up, I would submit my name. I said, I'm interested in doing this. Anything extra above and beyond, I was ready to do it. So they saw I was a go-getter, and after some time, they also saw that my stats were basically going through the roof. I had gotten more felony arrests in my first 2 years as a rookie on the job than some officers who had been on for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a go-getter, and they saw that. They said, you know what? She is effective. She's out there doing the job. We were single-car units, so you didn't have a partner. And basically, when you're in your squad, you either respond to calls or you strum up your own business. There are police officers out there who just respond to calls. And other police officers are go-getters who say, you know what? I want to look for crime. And that's what I was out there doing. I worked midnight shift. There was plenty of crime. There were lots of DUI arrests that I handled, domestic calls, bar fights. And then there are things that are self-imposed. When you do a traffic stop, you never know what kind of person you're going to stop, if they're going to have a warrant, if you're going to end up with drugs or a gun or anything like that. So for me it was, okay, what surprise is going to happen tonight? Who am I going to meet tonight? And obviously I knew that I needed to watch my back because I was a little bit more aggressive.
Well, I found one sentence in your book. Who'd have thought that my physical appearance would grant me as much safety as a gun and a ballistic vest?
Yes.
That question sentence to me was quite a powerful one.
Mm-hmm.
And you ended up becoming a part of a SWAT team. You also ended up being a part of Undercover Vice.
Yes.
Catching pedophiles. And you are so open about what went on in the process and everything that you had to deal with. I can tell you, I don't know how many people, in all honesty, would even be able to face that kind of ugliness as you were able to deal with it. Why did you become a part of the SWAT team?
Before I got hired as a police officer, I was a 911 dispatcher because I was waiting for the police exam. So a year and a half I had done that job, and I had watched the SWAT team prepare. I'd watched them load up all their weapons and their different tools and scopes and battering rams and all the different rifles. So I would watch them prepare, and I thought, wow, these guys are truly the creme de la creme. They're the real deal of the police department. And I started to inquire. The SWAT commander would stop and dispatch occasionally, and he would say, you know, have you ever been interested, and would you be interested in being a role player? Because SWAT's always looking for somebody to play a damsel in distress so that we can do live scenarios
mm-hmm.
and kind of see, you know, everybody needs to do their job. So they would create these makeshift scenarios, and I volunteered immediately because I thought this would be a great opportunity for me to get used to the team and actually see what they are, what they do. There was a definite draw there as far as the excitement, and once I was there, I was hooked. And in the back of my mind, I always thought, I will be a part of that team. I don't know when. I don't know how it's going to happen. However, it was one of the goals that I had. So 2 years later, when I found out a position was opening for the SWAT team, I did not hesitate. I read the general order that basically told you what the qualifications were as far as your firearm skills and physical skills and all of the training that it consisted of, and I said, I'm ready to do it. And I tested and went ahead with it, and I was selected. So I did become the first woman on the team.
This was a very special team. You were the first woman, but there was, and there's a picture of the group, although you have to be very discriminating with that because there's some very special situations regarding the SWAT team.
Right.
But you had a wonderful, wonderful group of men that worked with you. And I thought to myself, gee, more women like yourself need to be able to be upfront and open about the fact that if you're really good at what you do, whether you're male or female, it doesn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
Your colleagues, especially when it comes to something where how you handle yourself, how you think, how you respond, it's not unlike a team of SEALs.
Yes.
And, you know, you're there. You've got to back each other up. You've got to be there. Here you've had all of these experiences. You make the comment, there's nothing mundane about police work, especially undercover work. And that's very true.
Yeah.
It's very true. I've known officers whose lives they were never able to keep a balance in. Now, you were able to do that. Why? What was it that enabled you, Lisa, to keep actually a pretty good psychological balance, because that's a tough turf to be in.
It was kind of the mentality of acting as if, kind of what I used in the beauty pageant. I went on to the police and I thought, okay, let me look around and find mentors, find people who are getting great results, see what they're doing, and basically mimic it. So once I had these, you know, so-called mentors or heroes in my mind, I'd watch them truly, almost like how an actor studies some role that they're going to play. And I thought, okay, this is what they're doing, and I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to do it. So for me, it was adopting those characteristics. And even in a sense of, I didn't produce more testosterone, but a lot of times I felt like I was really understanding what it was like to be in a man in a man's world from having all of that exposure to them. Mm-hmm. So I would notice that there were certain things that would come out, some characteristics that were not the feminine little belle, you know, that I was as a kid. And I thought, you know what, I knew my core, I was feminine, and whenever I did need male energy to come up, I was prepared and ready to use it. However, with the guys, I said, you know what, I'm going to adopt as in Rome, and I'm going to behave very similarly to them in order to be accepted. So I kind of wore that hat, and I did fit in with them. They felt unthreatened. They felt that they could say anything they wanted to in front of me. They knew that I had thick skin and I wouldn't be offended by, you know, maybe a joke that could be off color, or, you know, mm-hmm. That was their environment. I felt like that was a woman entering a male-dominated environment. So I'm not going to ask them to adapt to me. I was going to make the choice of adapting to them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that has enabled you to win some of the awards that you've won. You were respected by your peers. Now, you left all of that behind you in 2003.
Yes.
And you entered into a whole different world. It was like a 180-degree shift.
Once again.
And I have to chuckle because you say you have an infamous need for speed. You like to skydive, hand glide, hang gliding, snowboarding, scuba, marathon running, NASCAR driving, and there's pictures of you in here, you know, in so many different mediums. You really have a passion for life, and in 2004 you became a neuro-linguistic programming timeline therapy and hypnosis
yes.
person, and you have taken your life to a whole new level.
I certainly have, and I would have to say I developed a lot of those skills on the job. My bachelor's was in psychology, so that was kind of the base for everything in working with men and adopting and handling different calls of service and dealing with people. You need a certain amount of psychological training in order to do that. And so what I did is basically I was doing the same thing. It was just a matter of being in another environment where I had an opportunity to coach people and make a business out of it versus, you know, being a police officer and coaching people that's as far as being part of my job. So
yeah.
For me, they kind of are hand in hand in the fact or the sense that I am helping people move through issues, move through fears, get the results that they want based on all the experiences that I have. It's just like you had mentioned, doing all those other extracurricular activities kind of just fills in the loss that I have from being on SWAT and working dangerous undercovers, because
mm-hmm.
I'm definitely a thrill junkie.
Definitely a thrill junkie. Well, Lisa Lockwood is a delightful woman who has a passion for living and for life, has seen many different things that I don't know that most people, male or female, would be interested in seeing. But her book, Undercover Angel, enables you to be able to sit back, safely be comfortable in a chair, on a plane, wherever you're going to take a book, and enter into a world of adventure where truth is much stranger than any fiction or any television program you could possibly watch. Lisa, you have a website, lisalockwood.com, that people can go to. And I know we're almost out of time. We have about 30 seconds. What would you like to leave my listeners with in the way of a thought?
My final thought would be, no matter what you want in your life, it is attainable if you adopt a few key principles. And one of the things that I felt benefited me the most was optimism. just truly embracing joy, and no matter what you do in life. The other is developing thick skin and not taking things personally. Because once you have that, once you decide to let go of all those different fears of worrying about what other people think, you're really free to do what you want. And finally, it's persistence. Just to go ahead and continue. No matter what obstacle comes in your way, find a different route because they are there. And go ahead and continue on until you get the thing that you desire.
Lisa Lockwood, thank you so much for being my guest. Her wonderful book, Undercover Angel, it's a must-read. And believe me, you won't be bored when you read this book. Lisa, it's been a delight. I wish you continued success. Thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll come back with more good stuff. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are open, just like they usually are at the bottom of the hour. Well, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Telephone number, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, if you're in Canada, you also can call in at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, I also want to remind those of you in Washington, especially in Western Washington, I am going to be appearing, doing many consultations at the Third Dickens Festival at Stadium Way. There's this wonderful community section in downtown Tacoma, and they have just put together this wonderful event. It's going to be tomorrow from 12 noon until 6 in the evening. And, of course, our weather here is crisp and brisk, so you'll want to bundle up because it's going to be that way. The skies have been pretty clear. But, oh, it's just wonderful to do something like this because you're getting ready for Christmas. And you're going to hear carolers. You're going to have all kinds of wonderful things going on. So come on over and also stop by the Tacoma Little Theater and say hello to me because I'm going to be doing many consultations there, and part of the proceeds will be going back into this event that is being put on. So if you want more information, check out their website, DickensFestival.net, DickensFestival.net. And again, I'm going to be at the Tacoma Little Theater from noon until 5 o'clock, and the event goes on, the whole activity of the whole area goes on until 6 in the evening. So it's a wonderful, wonderful event. Well, we've got a caller right off the bat. Let's go and talk to this person, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Jeanette. How are you, Donna?
I'm fine, Jeanette. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New York.
All right, one of my favorite cities. Okay, Jeanette, let's see here what we've got for you. You're going to have some tears over an individual that you feel is going to be very unkind to you.
Uh-huh.
They're going to be quite critical. Whoever this person is, I do think, actually, there are two different people. I think they're somehow related to each other. I'm seeing a male, and then I'm seeing a female following up with comments. Your first response is, my goodness, they've really hurt my feelings. They have said something that is just so very, very hurtful. But I need you to back away from that because you need to really see, hear, and understand what they have said to you. If you do, then you're not going to take it personally. And then you'll know how to respond back to them. And you will need to give them a response. Now, they will not have been thinking very clearly. They will be giving you an emotional response. It's just something that flies out of their mouth. So you need to be able to think about it and then at a later moment go back to them and say, this is what you said to me at such and such a time. And they're going to sort of flip it. You're going to say, no, you're going to listen to me. And I want you to know, one, I'm not taking it personally because you didn't know what you were talking about. And then you need to say the truth to them. And if they start getting all upset, say, if you want to get upset, you get upset, but you're going to get the facts right. And then I want you to go to the female that's going to follow with the remarks and say, you need to understand something clearly. Now, the key of success with this is being detached, not trying to say anything back that's hurtful, but giving facts and information, and don't take anything that they say personally, because if you do, then you're going to add fuel to the fire of discord that they are going to want to throw into your environment with their uncaring thoughts. So remember, it's up to you as to how you're going to respond to this. What question do you have for me today?
I have a question because actually last night I just got hit by a car in Manhattan. Yeah, it was not good. And the driver who drove the cab, it was a black cab, a Lincoln cab, and he basically hit and run. But he did got off the car for a while, and he checked to see if I was all right. And then I was talking to a witness. And as I was talking to the witness, he drove off really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't find his plate number, and the police haven't really delved into this yet, like, because I didn't give them the plate number, and don't know what's going to happen.
All right. Now, Jeanette, let me ask you a question. Do you have the license plate number of that taxi cab?
Of the who?
Of the taxi cab.
Oh, no, that's the thing. We didn't copy it down. Like, no one copied it down.
All right. They don't have very much to go on. And Manhattan is bumper-to-bumper vehicles. And if this was a taxi cab that hit you, do you know the name of the company?
No, but it was a black Lincoln cab, and it probably belongs to some car service in the area or in New York, definitely. But I don't know the name of the car service because he drove off really soon. Like,
okay,
we didn't really have time to copy down his plate number, or I wasn't really aware at that time because everyone around me were talking to me.
All right, now you have a witness or two, right?
I have one witness.
All right, do you have their phone number?
I have his phone number.
Okay, and you've got all of that. Well, it's a shame that there wasn't anyone there to be supportive enough to make sure that he stayed so that you could get his license plate and all of that for insurance purposes. Because that's fairly standard procedure, but you being the one that was hit, then that was something, and you fortunately you were not seriously injured. However, it probably will need some detective work on your part. And the police department gets reports like this every day. And they are so inundated with different things. You filed a report, which is very important. And there is a way of tracing it, but it's going to be very, very tedious. So I think what I would do is try to go down to the police department and say, this is what happened. I have the name and number of a witness, and I can give that to you. How would you suggest I go about trying to find out, you know, the type of vehicle that's driven, what cab company or transportation company would have this style, and see if you can get some insight from them? And if you have anyone that can assist you with this, that's great. Also, you have some local stations, some local radio stations there, and they may want to help you out. But by, you know, making announcements, someone was hit by this XYZ vehicle at such and such a time. If you were witness to it, if you have any information, then please give us a call here at the station. And you might be able to get some kind of a response. But this may well take more of an investigation on your part.
Okay.
And I think that until you find out the company that has this type of a vehicle, this color of a vehicle, and if you got a good look at the driver, of course, you're the one hit. You may not even remember him. But it's something that if the witness could describe the driver, if the witness could give certain points of information, that would be very good. So you've done everything appropriately, but I don't know that the police are going to be able to help you very much.
You don't know if they're going to be able to help me very much.
Right. I don't think so. I think that it's going to be very difficult for them. But I'd go down and I'd talk to them and see what they would recommend.
Do you see me eventually getting out of this, you know, this situation?
Well, what is the situation, hon? What's the situation?
Well, the situation is, you know, the fact that I got hit, and I just feel like it's unfair, like that guy.
Well, life is not always fair, Jeanette. You are in a city that is so heavily and densely populated. There's nothing fair about this. This guy is a hit and run. Instead of being responsible, he probably got very frightened and he just took off. He knows what the laws are, and that may be the only way he can make an income. And so he figures, if you're okay, he checked on you to make sure you were okay. He cared enough to do that. Then he moved.
Okay.
He would probably have lost his job immediately. So there's extenuating circumstances here. You're basically okay. This has nothing whatsoever to do with fairness. It's something that happened, and you need to be able to do what you can, and you need to move on.
Okay. Thank you, Donna.
You are welcome. I wish there was a magic formula for you here, but there isn't. But I think out of this experience, one, be very grateful that he was attentive enough to care. And number two, that there was someone else and a number of other people that were concerned about you. So that gives you a good insight of what's going on. But as far as finding this vehicle, you may be the one that's going to have to locate the company that this vehicle belongs to.
Okay. Thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome, hon, and happy holidays to you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, by the way, you know, she brought up something here. It is the holiday season. And I will tell you, sometimes, I don't care whether you're living in New York City, downtown Manhattan, it doesn't make any difference. People are out and about, and I am just amazed at how frazzled people get instead of enjoying the holiday season. They're in such a hurry. They're in such a rush. They put themselves under so much pressure, and they get into these parking lots that are literally wall-to-wall with cars and walking pedestrians. So when you're out and about, take it easy. Take time, for heaven's sakes. Don't make it, gee, I got 5 minutes and that's it. Don't lose your cool. For heaven's sakes, enjoy this holiday season. If you know you're going to go out shopping, just plan it's going to take you an extra hour or whatever that may be needed. But I want you to be patient. Be patient, because the people out walking are just in there, out there by the billions. So just be aware and be safe. Be safe. I want you to enjoy your holiday. Don't be in a hurry. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go anywhere now. Bye-bye. Don't go.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Now, I know we've got a caller waiting, and if you want to chat with me, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also 530-876-3222. Now, quickly before I go to our next caller, I want to let you know who's coming up as my guest next week. If you've heard of Habitat for Humanity, well, we're going to find out the story about that wonderful organization. It's the book titled The House That Love Built. Betty Youngs is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking with Judy Strong on Tuesday, No Time to Grieve. This is a wonderful, wonderful publication, really gives insights into a lot of things in life. Celebrity Pets, yes, Lai Uberlund is going to be my guest. Then on Thursday, Ron Clancy is a repeat guest of mine. He put out a wonderful publication, Millennium Christmas Music. It is absolutely awesome, and so we're going to be dedicating that program to music. And then Russell Targ, we were able to reconnect with Russell. We're going to be talking about his insightful and inspiring book, The End of Suffering. So we have a wonderful lineup of guests. Tell your friends. And also, if you want, go on my website for my email newsletter, and you can go and look at all the guests that we have lined up for the month. And also BBS, we have that there. And if you should miss a show, just go into the archives, pull it out, and then you can listen to it as you work on whatever you're doing on your computer at your own leisure. And we're just so excited about so many of the things that are happening, and we're delighted to be able to provide that to you. Donna Sebo here. Let's go to our next caller who's been waiting so very patiently. First name or initial, and where are you calling from? Hello, caller.
From Tucson, and my name is Teresa.
Okay, Teresa, and you're calling from Tucson. Happy holidays to you. And Teresa, the first thing that's coming into my mind, don't sweat the small stuff. You must take care of the little things so that the bigger items can be taken care of. If you take care of the little things, you're going to be able to take some of the giant steps that you're working so hard towards achieving. I'm also looking at the fact that you have to realize that the first quarter of 2008 is going to be very demanding. It's going to be a lot of hard work. What did you want to ask me, Teresa?
Do you see the result of a couple of meetings that I had this morning? Do you see them as positive things emerging from that?
Why is it you're concerned about the meetings, Teresa?
I'm wondering if there's going to be contact, follow-up contact from those meetings, and there'll be more requests for information that I presented.
Do you have their contact information?
Yes.
All right. I wouldn't wait for them to contact you. I would get on the phone and follow up, or you could send them a nice note. But if you want, do something that most people don't do, and that is thank them. How many people, Teresa, were in your group?
80 at one group and 100 at another group.
All right. If you had that many in the group, if you are willing to make the investment, go ahead and ask them. Say if they gave you feedback. Did you have a response card at the end of your program for them to fill out?
No, but that's...
All right, let me give you a suggestion. Because when you're dealing with groups of that size, that's a substantial amount of people. And what you might want to do the next time you do something like this, you might want to have a little postcard that you have printed up where you might want to do a follow-up, get feedback from them, sort of like an evaluation card, if you will, and then get feedback from them and ask them if you might have permission to contact them about the response to the program. And if they say yes, then have a place for them to put their contact information down. If you have that contact information, then just get on the phone and start making some calls.
Okay.
And ask them, say you're doing an evaluation of the program. From 1 to 5, how would they rate what you had presented, and what are their feelings, what would they like to share with you? Make it a personal contact and see what they have to say.
Okay. All right. Are you psychically getting, like, a positive response?
I'm not getting anything one way or the other as far as, yay, this was a great, successful thing, or, gee, boo, it's pretty bad. I'm not getting anything on it one way or the other.
Okay.
This was an experience that you had. This put you in front of a substantial number of people. If you want the information, then you need to ask for the information. Otherwise, you're not going to get it. It's really not good, bad, or in the middle. It's just an experience you had. So what you're wanting me to do is give you a confirmation of some kind, but you need go after it, and you need to ask yourself why it's important for you to know. So that then if you contact some of these people, if you want to do it just a random group, maybe just do 20 calls from the first group and 20 from the second group, just do it at random, that's fine. Do it.
Okay.
But it's up to you. If you want to find out, you're the one that's going to have to make the investment. And don't take it personally. But approach it in a professional manner and get the feedback. Have your questions laid out that you'd want to ask them. What do they feel about XYZ? Some of them may say, gee, I don't even remember what you said.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's all right.
Okie doke.
You know, if the politicians can use this kind of a method to get information, why can't you?
Completely, completely.
I want to thank you for your call, and happy holidays to you.
You too. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna Sebo, and my goodness, we are out of time. Now, don't forget, on Monday, we're going to have Habitat for Humanity, their story. We're going to find out about how this Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Betty Youngs, took the time to do this story that is going to take us on a journey like you would never believe would be possible, but it is. So this is going to be a wonderful interview on Monday. We have a fabulous weekend coming up. Don't forget, tomorrow I'm going to be at the Tacoma Little Theater on I Street in Stadium High area in downtown Tacoma, for those of you who are in Washington, and it is going to be a lot of fun. I'll be there in costume along with hundreds of other people, and just look for me because I'll be doing little mini sessions for people, but it's a great family event. Do come out to the Dickens Festival. This is their third year, and they're expecting thousands of people to turn out. Come on by and say hello. I'll be there from 12 noon until 5 o'clock. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is coming into the holiday season. Fill your heart with the right kind of feeling and the right kind of thinking, and go out and just beam it. Beam it, beam it, beam it. We need it, and it will be a joy to cross your path. Take care. Bye for now. Talk with you on Monday.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.